Secretary of State John Kerry heads to Moscow this week to meet with his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov. Kerry will also meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin to discuss a possible political settlement to the bloody conflict in Syria. Putin's decision to support Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's regime has placed the Russian president back in the focus of a lot of American foreign policy, something he's been able to do many times in the past decade. Well, a new biography documents Putin's rise and reign. It's called The New Tsar. The author is New York Times reporter Stephen Lee Myers, and he joins us from Washington. And Stephen, you write about how Putin grew up in poverty in Leningrad after World War II, how he wants really more than anything to be a spy. He joins the KGB eventually, but he's more of a bureaucrat than a secret agent, and he's posted to East Germany, to Dresden. And as the communist East German regime begins to collapse, Putin watches anti-government protesters storm the Stasi, or secret police headquarters in Dresden. And Putin is nearby at the KGB offices when angry protesters show up there. Stephen, pick up that story for us and what impact it had on Putin.
I think it's one of the experiences that probably resonates most deeply with him. After the Berlin Wall fell, the protests in East Germany continued. They gained momentum as the communist government fell apart. And in Dresden, they gathered outside the Stasi headquarters, the secret police of the East German government. The KGB villa where he had worked for all those years is just around the corner from it. So he saw thousands of people gather at this East German headquarters where he had worked closely with his counterparts, and he saw them eventually breach the building. It was mostly a peaceful demonstration, but nonetheless, it was the end of the Stasi in East Germany. A part of the crowd that was at the Stasi headquarters then moved up the street to where the KGB headquarters was. And Putin was at that point a lieutenant colonel, not so high ranking. He was effectively the number two officer in the villa there. And he found himself confronted with this mob outside. Mob as he saw it. I talked to one of the guys who was in the crowd who said it was more of a peaceful demonstration. But nonetheless, Putin called the Soviet military command there in Dresden and asked for reinforcements to protect the building. The famous exchange he tells of the officer on the other end of the line saying that he couldn't do anything because he had no instructions from Moscow. This was a time, of course, when Gorbachev had decided he was not going to use force to intervene in the in Eastern Europe as those communist governments were falling one by one. And the phrase that stuck with Putin was from the other officer, "Moscow is silent." And he saw this as a collapse of not only the authorities, the central authority of the East German government and the chaos that ensued, but also a collapse of the Soviet government.
Moscow is silent. What lesson does he take out of that for his political life going forward, do you think?
I think it's something that's just deeply embedded in his sensibility, and you see it in the way he's conducted his presidency, the way he's tightened the control of elections inside of Russia, also the you know, the prospects of protests or public assembly even. He sees a weak government as the greatest danger. That is, the state is what holds back the worst instincts of people, of the mob. And if you let it run its course, if the government is not in control, you'll have chaos that follows. And he experienced that with the collapse of the Soviet Union. He experienced that in the years that he was in St. Petersburg serving as a deputy mayor. He is frightened of that in every aspect of his rise through power, whether it's protests on the street against Yeltsin or against his own government that emerged periodically over the years, most importantly in 2011 and 12 when he returned for another term as president.
Interesting. After Germany, he falls in with a leading reformer in St. Petersburg, then Leningrad. But he's a bit conflicted, Stephen. Talk about that. I mean, on the one hand, he's there as a KGB agent to keep an eye on this guy. But on the other hand, he sees the system he's believed in all his life starting to crumble, and he picks a side. Tell us about that.
You know, it's interesting that at one point he very famously said that the collapse of the Soviet Union was the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century, a comment he's been ridiculed for. But nonetheless, it's partly the way he experienced the collapse of the Soviet Union. After the events in Dresden and in East Germany, he, like thousands of other agents of the Soviet Union, agents, diplomats, trade representatives, soldiers who had been living abroad, who had supported this broader Soviet socialist empire in Europe and around the world, all retreated back to the Soviet Union. And it was a humiliating experience for many of them. They came back, there were no jobs. And, you know, he faced that himself. The KGB finally gave him a job as a deputy rector at the university in Leningrad, which was not a prestigious job at all. It would have been to essentially keep an eye on foreign students. And at that point, he was at a loss. I mean, he talks about it. His wife and his friends talk about it. He wasn't sure, like most Soviet citizens at the time, where the country was going or what prospects they had in it. Through his work at the university, he did come into contact with Anatoly Sobchak, who became the mayor of St. Petersburg. And this was a very heady time for the reformers. And Sobchak was an ally of Boris Yeltsin, one of the leading Democrats of the new Russia that was emerging. And after the failed coup attempt in August of 1991, Putin had been on vacation when it started. But Sobchak sided very decisively with Yeltsin in resisting the coup.
But Stephen, was it more opportunistic than ideological in terms of picking sides?
I think it was opportunistic in the sense that he didn't really feel like he had much of a choice. He wasn't ever an ardent communist. He was an ardent believer in the security of the state. He was a loyal soldier of the KGB. For him, it wasn't ideological, I don't think. He saw the coup the same way a lot of other Russians did, as a, you know, desperate grasp of a regime that was falling apart. As he tells the story, it was on the second day of the coup when he submitted his resignation, a second time, according to him. But nonetheless, he broke with it. He took a side and went with Sobchak.
During this period, you write that there wasn't really a sign that Putin was going to go as far as he has. Talk about his KGB connections and whether that helped his eventual rise to power.
You know, he had a decisive break with the KGB. And if you remember, Boris Yeltsin dismantled the KGB after 1991, hoping to break the power of the KGB over society. And to a large extent, I think Yeltsin succeeded in doing that. On the other hand, the people inside Russia who had connections, who had legitimate connections and also nefarious ones with a criminal underworld, for example, they used those connections. So it wasn't so much that the KGB was still exerting influence, but people who had served in it had connections with other people who had served, and they used that to great effect in building business relationships and so forth. If you remember, the 90s in Russia was an incredibly chaotic period. I mean, they were making up laws to create a capitalistic system. They didn't have a lot of the things we would take for granted, even in terms of market rules and regulations and so forth. And he was very much involved in that. And people like Sobchak, in this chaotic political situation, turned to the people who had security experience, who had, like Putin, foreign experience. Putin speaks German very well, was able to bring in contacts he knew from Germany to set up some of the first banks and businesses in St. Petersburg in the 90s. And so in that sense, he was able to use a lot of the connections that he had formed to, you know, wield influence and power inside Petersburg. What's interesting is when he moved to Moscow, all of those connections moved with him. And you see them there to this day.
Stephen, the relationship with the West seems more strained than ever right now with the Obama administration. Is there a chance to get it back on track?
You know, it's interesting also. You have to remember the interregnum, as I call it, the 4 years when Dmitry Medvedev served as president after Putin served his first two terms as president. That was when Obama was elected. And during those 4 years, you actually did see quite an improvement in relations with the United States. I think what began to break that down was the Arab Spring, which goes back to the experience he had in Dresden. Putin saw these uprisings against authoritarian governments in the Middle East and North Africa as being a very dangerous precedent. And the United States, in his mind, and other European allies were supporting these movements, even instigating them, he believed.
I mean, the title of your book is The New Tsar, and there doesn't appear to be anyone waiting in the wings to pose as a viable challenger to Tsar Putin, or are we missing something?
The fact is that he so singularly controls the political system that the nature of any opposition is inconceivable. The ability for the opposition to form is inconceivable. He will be able to control the process of his succession, as he did in 2008 when his second presidential term ended the first time. And I think that what you'll see is some process like that. But, you know, that's many years from now. It's 8 years from now before that will happen. And some people predict that, he cannot sustain his power given the pressures on the economy, the sanctions because of the events in Ukraine. But I believe he'll be able to survive until 2018, and that he at this point isn't even thinking about the need to think of an heir or a successor.
Stephen Lee Myers is a correspondent for The New York Times. His new book is The New Tsar, The Rise and Reign of Vladimir Putin. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.